I did not go to Ethelfled's funeral. She was buried in Gloucester in the same vault as her husband, whom she hated. Her brother, King Edward of Wessex, was chief mourner, and when the rites were done and Ethelfled's corpse had been walled up, he stayed in Gloucester. His sister's strange banner of the Holy Goose was lowered over the palace, and the Dragon of Wessex was hoisted in its place. The message could not have been plainer. Mercia no longer existed. In all the British lands south of Northumbria and east of Wales, there was only one kingdom and one king. Edward sent me a summons, demanding I travel to Gloucester and swear fealty to him for the lands I owned in what had been Mercia, and the summons bore his name followed by the words, Anglorum Saxonum Rex, King of the Angles and the Saxons. I ignored the document. Within a year, a second document reached me, this one signed and sealed in Wintonchester. By the grace of God, it told me, the lands granted to me by Ethelfled of Mercia were now forfeited to the Bishopric of Hereford, which, the parchment assured me, would employ said lands to the furtherance of God's glory. Meaning, Bishop Wolford will have more silver to spend on his whores, I told Edith.
Maybe you should have gone to Gloucester, she suggested.
And swear loyalty to Edward, I spat the name. Never. I don't need Wessex, and Wessex doesn't need me.
So, what will you do about the estates? She asked.
Nothing, I said. What could I do? Go to war against Wessex? It annoyed me that Bishop Wolford, an old enemy, had taken the land, but I had no need of Mercian lands. I owned Bebbanburg. I was a Northumbrian lord, and owned all that I wanted. Why should I do anything? I growled at Edith. I'm old and I don't need trouble.
You're not old, she said loyally.
I'm old, I insisted. I was over 60. I was ancient.
You don't look old.
So Wolford can plough his whores and let me die in peace. I don't care if I never see Wessex or Mercia ever again. Yet a year later I was in Mercia, mounted on Tintreg, my fiercest stallion, and wearing a helmet and mail, and with serpent breath my sword slung at my left hip. Rorick, my servant, carried my heavy iron-rimmed shield, and behind us were 90 men, all armed, and all mounted on war horses.
Sweet Jesus, Finan said beside me.
He was gazing at the enemy in the valley beneath us.
400 of the bastards, he paused. At least 400, maybe 5.
I said nothing. It was late on a winter's afternoon, and bitterly cold. The horse's breath misted among the leafless trees that crowned the gentle ridge from where we watched our enemy. The sun was sinking and hidden by clouds, which meant no betraying sparks of light could be reflected from our mail or weapons. Away to my right, to the west, the River Dee lay flat and grey as it widened towards the sea. On the lower ground in front of us was the enemy and, beyond them, Chester.
500, Finan decided.
I never thought I'd see this place again, I said. Never wanted to see it again.
They broke the bridge,
Finan said, peering far to the south.
Wouldn't you, in their place?
The place was Chester, and our enemy was besieging the city. Most of that enemy was to the east of the city, but smoking campfires betrayed plenty to the city's north. The River Dee flowed just south of the city walls, then turned north towards its widening estuary, and by breaking the central span of the ancient Roman bridge, the enemy had ensured that no relief force could come from the south. If the city's small garrison was to fight its way out of the trap, they would need to come north or east, where the enemy was strongest. And that garrison was small. I had been told, though it was nothing more than a guess, that fewer than 100 men held the city. Finan must have been thinking the same thing.